Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. How do you save energy and stay warm in the winter? We will be talking about that today with our home improvement specialist, John Freiberger. Talk about saving energy in the winter, controlling condensation in the home. John's a Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures. And maybe you have some problems with condensation in your home. What questions do you have for John? Give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. John Freiberger, welcome back.
Glad to be with you again, Larry.
It's always fun to have you come by. You were emailing a little bit back and forth with a listener who was having some condensation problems with her home.
It's wonderful. It's a textbook example of what can go wrong in your home in the winter.
Oh, so what was going on? There was water leaking.
Well, of course, I'm doing diagnosis by email and by photograph, which is always a little on the dangerous side. So I've not been to her house, but she noted in her basement, which is finished, a circle on the drywall near the outside wall. And it was sort of brown and gray, which suggested it was wet. And she went outside and she found icicles underneath her siding. So I suggested to her that the first thing she needed to do, since the bathroom was there, was to take off the access panel that most houses have so you can take a look at the mixing valve and the drain and things for the shower. And she did. And what she found was a whole lot of water.
Oh.
The other thing that we saw in the photo is there is no insulation.
Oh.
So I think that she has a combination both of condensation and possibly some leaks in her fairly old ceramic shower that has one of those metal soap dishes, and they have a tendency to leak. So I think what we have happening here is we've got moisture cycling. She has some small leaks going on. With the warmth of the inside of the house, those turn into water vapor. That water vapor is driven through the walls by the inside heat. When it hits the backside of the siding or the sheathing, it turns into water and it runs down and freezes. So I'll probably be talking to her further in the future. But fortunately, she has a 1954 home, and she has real wood in it. Hmm. Where this 1980s home or 1990s home or modern home with oriented strand board, she would have very, very serious mold issues. And what is happening is as we've changed construction, we've been getting more and more condensation, less and less drying, and then the materials that we are using are materials that are very easy for fungi to grow on.
And that's, are the homes too tight? What's going on? Let me put it this way. What exactly is happening when water vapor condenses in the home? You gave a good example of, one situation.
Right. Well, we've all heard that what's the dew point today on the weather, right?
Yeah.
So the dew point is the point where water vapor condenses out. So right now in the morning, we're walking outside and we're seeing frost on our lawns. Well, that's condensation. And what we know is that the average house in Wisconsin, most people are keeping their houses between 68 and 72, so let's pick 70 degrees as the average house in Wisconsin. Most people are pretty smart about their indoor humidity. They try to keep it around 40%. Now, we know that we have a dew point at 70 degrees, or the amount of moisture in the air at 40% humidity, that if that air is cooled to 43 degrees, mm-hmm. that moisture will condense out. And what we see it in the house usually primarily is it's real easy to see on our windows, because our windows are lousy, and they probably always will be lousy compared to the rest of our house. So I get call after call about windows that are turning black or getting moldy. But when that window hits 43 degrees with the average Wisconsin home, we are going to end up getting condensation. So basically, water vapor is changing its state from vapor to liquid water.
So what do we do about resolving that, or can we?
Well, can we resolve it? Boy, that's a... I will answer that question for the next hour and a half, Larry. Such a good one. Well, we have things that we can do to houses to prevent condensation. Now, number one is the lower the percentage of moisture is in the air, the higher the temperature is going to be, or the less condensation we're, yeah, we're going to get. So we certainly don't want to see a house at 50, 55, 60% humidity in the winter. We don't want to be running humidifiers. If we've got four dogs, three children, the dryer vented to the interior, two open fish tanks and a bunch of plants, I've gone into houses, Larry, that were 60 and 65% wet in the winter.
Oh.
One family was going to sue the window manufacturer in their brand new house because their windows were all wet and rotting. But when I measured the humidity inside the house, I said, here's your problem. It was not the windows, because the windows were doing as they were supposed to. But we had so much moisture load in the house that we had pushed that relative humidity up to the point where at 65% relative humidity, when the air temperature hits 57, you're going to end up with condensation in that house. So, number one, let's try to get down around 40%. At 40% in Wisconsin, we are almost always going to see condensation on windows on chilly days outside. That's just simply a fact. But on our windows, if we keep a good finish on them and things, you know, windows are pretty tough. Mold doesn't grow on glass. It grows on the dirt on glass. But what we need to do is we need to protect our walls. And we have a lot of different ways of doing that. And one of them is with vapor barriers are required in Wisconsin so that the water vapor can't get into the wall. But those are usually not so good. And the other thing that we're working on more and more is smarter insulation and also smarter vapor barriers. So if our walls get wet, they can dry both to the inside and to the outside. So number one, reduce moisture load. Number two, try to limit moisture movement. Number three, if we can't limit moisture movement, let's make it dry before it turns moldy.
Stephanie in Door County has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My question is specific to my house. We have just moved in a couple of months ago to a house built in 1948, and we have electric baseboards in each of the rooms with individual thermostats. Currently, we're doing some alternative practices to try and conserve energy. We have thermal curtains up over our windows, and we actually closed off one of the rooms that gets really chilly, and we just won't use it this winter. We have things under the door to prevent any kind of chilly airflow from coming in, and we typically try to keep the thermostat set between 63 and 68, no higher than 68, really.
Okay.
So I'm just curious if the guest today has any other alternative ways to conserve our baseboard heating that doesn't involve turning up the thermostat to warm up the house. And then also, I'm curious if it would be better for us to keep each of the rooms at a lower temperature, say like 40 degrees, and then turn it up when we're going to be in that room, or if it makes more sense to turn off the thermostat and then turn it back on once we come home.
Okay, there are two questions here. One is the one you asked, how do we save some money on this expensive electric
exactly.
heat? I mean, electric heat is 100% efficient. The problem is you're paying about three times as much per BTU as with gas. So nowadays, when we've got 96% efficient gas furnaces, electric heat in many cases is three times as expensive as natural gas. Now, if you're out in the country and there's LP and things, it's not quite as good. But still, electric is a very expensive BTU to buy. Now, first, decreasing the temperature. We were just talking about as the temperature goes down, we hit the dew point. So if you go into those rooms and turn the temperature down to 40 and the dew point is 43, you may walk into those rooms in 2 days and find the walls are entirely gray with mold. So
right.
Don't do that.
Okay.
I had a couple that saved some money when they went to Florida and turned the house down to 50, and we came back. Their basement looked like an aspergillus factory.
Oh.
Everything was white and furry. They saved $400 on the utility bill, and they spent $10,000 cleaning the house. It was not a good thing to do. So do not decrease that temperature.
Okay.
All right. You've got a 1948 house.
Yes.
Maybe you've got R5, R6, R7 in the walls. You might have the old inch and a half felt or craft paper covered bats in there,
mm-hmm.
or you might have nothing. So I think what you want to do is let's put a little science behind this. So let's go to Focus on Energy and let's find preferably an independent energy analyst. Let's have him come and blow a door test and take thermal images of your house. From the thermal images, he knows on any given day, I should say he or she knows on any given day, the temperature of those windows are going to be at, because we pretty much know the U and R value of the windows. So if he looks at the walls, he's going to be able to tell you what the heat loss is through those walls.
Okay.
And my guess is it's going to be pretty fantastic.
So
hi. Yeah, so how do we lower the cost? It's nice of you to keep the ice off of Green Bay by heating all of Door County, but it really is expensive. So you could take a look at, if it works in your house, of putting in ductwork and a gas furnace.
Okay.
But the better way to do it may be to think about putting insulation in the house. And in a house of that age, what I would suggest is putting as much of the insulation as possible on the exterior.
Mm.
In Wisconsin, we really want to have at least 40 to 50%, and basically where you are, I know you're in sort of a Door County, sort of odd as far as the region, but
yes,
in northern Wisconsin, we want at least 50% of the insulation on the outside of the sheathing. So you could take a look at taking the siding off of your house, blowing in cellulose or a mineral fiber into the wall cavities, and then adding enough foam on the exterior, and it might be 3 inches of urethane, so that you have at least 50% of your insulation on the outside. There actually is no particular reason why your 1948 house, when retrofitted, can't work as well as a brand new house. It's just that it does take some money, but then again, mm-hmm, think of what you're saving. The
right
energy analyst can actually help you figure out the payback, and you should also check with Focus on Energy, because there are whole house programs where you can actually get, I believe it's $2,000 in income-based, maybe even more, if you are really retrofitting an entire house. So let's hire an energy analyst, let's see what's really going on, and then after that, talk to somebody who knows how to design a good thermal envelope for you.
Yeah, and that Focus on Energy is really critical, I think, John. And the nice thing, as you point out, that person will sit down with you and say, well, here's the whole laundry list of things you can do. Here's what's the most bang for the buck, number one, and so forth down the line.
That's absolutely right. And we're looking at savings on utility bills. But the other thing that we're looking at, when we have a house that eats electricity like that, we're really, I think, increasing the value of the home by, mm-hmm, making it more energy efficient.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. So go online to Focus on Energy and take a look, Stephanie.
Okay, will do. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Peter in Madison up next. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Larry. Hi, John.
Hello to you.
Hey. I am building a new studio behind a house I own, and it's a 2x4 construction. It's going to have fiberglass R19 in the walls. On the outside, I put a continuous layer of 2-inch extruded polystyrene, so I've got a good R value, and I taped it up within an inch of its life. It's extremely well sealed. Then I find out that the building code still requires me to put a vapor barrier on the inside. Now, my concern is I have an OSB continuous sheathing, and no matter how well I seal the outlets, the inner vapor barrier is going to be more permeable than that extruded polystyrene, and I'm going to get some ice buildup under certain conditions, you know, through the condensation, and then in the spring, that water isn't going to be able to get back out very easily. And my real question is, when do you expect the building codes to start recognizing that we need that the continuous insulation is preferable, and that we need to allow a lower degree of a higher degree of permeability on the interior to let that vapor out again once it evaporates?
Well, in most of the U.S., the codes actually recognize that. The International Residential Code and also the International Energy Efficiency Code both recognize exactly the questions that you're asking. And there's just a ton of articles at this point of people taking a look at how we manage OSB, because OSB is, frankly, an awful product.
Hmm.
We've tested OSB One test that was done, I think it was at University of Waterloo, is they basically took two sheets of plywood, framed them up in a stud wall, two sheets of OSB, put them next to each other, put them in a chamber so that they were treated identically as far as temperature and moisture. After 2 weeks, the OSB is gray with mold. The plywood's completely clean. So OSB is basically, you can grow any kind of mushroom you want on OSB. Mm-hmm. So it really becomes a difficulty. Now, one thing you said, Peter, you said you have a 2x4 wall, but you've got R19 in the wall?
I'm sorry, R13.
R13, okay.
I apologize.
Yeah, no problem, but that's actually better. Because that means if you've got extruded poly on the outside, you're probably pretty close to that 50%. At least you've got 40% of your insulation on the exterior. So that's going to help a great deal. That is going to, in most circumstances, keep that cavity warm enough that the dew point is going to be outside your OSB. The dew point is going to be someplace inside that extruded poly. So that is indeed going to help. At that point, then your interior vapor barrier isn't doing you a lot of damage. Now, there are three types of vapor barriers, as we know. There's class 1, class 2, and class 3. I think that Wisconsin is only allowing a class 1, but if you can use a class 2 or class 3, I'd actually have to check the code book, and you could probably do it as well or talk to your inspector, is that maybe you can use a more permeable interior vapor barrier. The class 3 can be as open as anywhere from 1 to 10 perms. And even the class 2 is going to help a little bit. I mean, the great old stuff was the old craft paper, because it actually acted very similarly to our smart vapor barriers, is the permeability change the wetter it got. So take a look at that. Now, you've already sided the exterior?
All done.
Okay. Well, otherwise I would say, let's put another inch of foam on the outside, and then I know we're good. I'm sorry?
I would have, but I couldn't find nails long enough to put the siding on.
Oh, then you put on wood strips, and then you put a rain screed siding on, so your siding lasts forever.
Oh, yeah.
So had you only called 6 months ago, Peter, we'd be in really good shape. But you have managed to hit that sweet spot between 0.4 and 0.5 of the insulation being on the exterior. So you are less likely to have problems. Now, you also have a studio. So it's not like you're doing laundry, cooking. You're not going to have a tremendous amount.
Unfortunately, I'm prepared to put in a hot tub or a pottery studio.
Oh, dear. Okay. Then make sure you've got very good ventilation. You may want, if you're going to put a hot tub in, you're probably going to want an exhaust fan with a heat recovery ventilation system.
Yep.
All right. There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger of John Freiberger & Associates, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Louisa DeVogo, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll have some suggestions for great gardening gifts for the person in your life with a green thumb. Right now, taking a look at home improvement, controlling condensation with John Freiberger. Great to have him back. You can join in. I think there's an open line or two at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Vicki in Harpers Ferry, Iowa. Your turn now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. We have a new home. We just finished construction in 2017. And my concern is that this is the first time we've lived in it in the winter, that there's a half an inch to an inch and a half of condensation on all the windows. And I'm worried the sills are going to rot in 5 years. And just to give you some background, we did wrap the house, and we did spray foam insulation, and we purchased pretty good windows. So I know it's the humidity level on the inside of the house, but I read from the window manufacturer that with new construction, you can expect all the moisture to enter the house. Number one, is that true? And number two, should we run overhead fans? Should we run a wood-burning fireplace? Should we buy a hygrometer? I mean, I'd like to do things other than run a dehumidifier. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, we once we get below 35% interior humidity, our skin gets dry, mucous membranes aren't good. So I do think you want to have something where you actually know the humidity inside your house. You know, buy a decent humidistatin. Try to keep it at 40 or lower. The problems, as we said earlier, if we compare the thermal performance of windows compared to our walls, and it sounds like you've got really great walls. I mean, your walls, if you've got 6 inches of spray foam and there are even 4 inches of spray foam, your walls are probably R30. If you've got really, really good triple pane windows with low E, argon gas, and two layers of heat mirror, if you translate the U factor into an R factor, those are R4.
Yeah.
So in other words, your windows are 1/7 as good as your walls in the best case, in a really a best case scenario, as far as retaining heat. So those windows are simply going to get cold. So what we have to take a look at is window maintenance. If these windows came pre-finished, pre-sprayed, you know, some sort of spray lacquer with the with the stain in it, that just is, it's not much of a finish. You really maybe need to think about getting a really good quality finish on those windows, something that is really quite water resistant, sort of what's called a spar finish, which can either be in a water base or can be in an oil base. But you want to make sure that your wood, if it has wood interiors, is well protected. And secondly, you want to make sure that the weather stripping is good, so we're not getting condensation moving down. Now, we're going to push condensation out into the windows if the pressure inside our house is higher than outdoors. So the use of exhaust fans or even HRVs to try to control the interior pressure of the house so we're not wetting the windows and the insides of the walls through every crack is also a good idea.
All right, thank you. I do want to just say, though, that the windows were, they're painted and at the factory, so it's a factory sealed paint on the wood?
Yeah, probably not very good.
Oh.
No, factory sprayed, usually it's a one-coat spray. It's very thin, and it's highly permeable. And
right.
If you can simply put a drop of water on the wood and see what happens to it, if it immediately starts spreading out, you know that it's pretty porous. Generally, you need 3 coats of an oil-based paint or an oil-based varnish or a good urethane to get the pores 96% closed. I've never seen that come from a factory spray job. So I think what you want to do is get a good quality finish on these windows so that when you wipe the water off, the water's off and the finish doesn't get damaged. And you may find in 10 years you're going to be touching up some of them. Usually it's the windows on the south side. But factory new house spray just is not very high quality.
But then get the humidity down. It sounds like the humidity's up pretty high in that house.
It may not be, Larry, but again, we're I'm not sure exactly where Vicki is in Iowa, but
northeast, I think.
When the outside temperature is even 38 degrees, that window's going to drop to 45, 43, 41 degrees, and we're going to get condensation even at 40%. So we really need to protect those windows.
Yeah.
And this is reason why a lot of people have been going to vinyl and fiberglass, frankly, is that you can wipe them off, and especially the fiberglass is not damaged by the moisture.
Yeah.
But we have to remember air pressure, too, is we don't want our houses to be acting like balloons where we have this warm, wet moisture pushing against the outside walls looking for places to escape all the time. And this is why with a lot of new houses, we really want to have HRVs in the house. We want to keep them pressure balanced.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Eric in Endeavor, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Larry, two things. First of all, I don't mean to sound condensating. Thank you.
All right.
I don't want to come off condensating, but I have a 12-year-old house. We were having huge moisture issues on our windows. We did have an energy audit, and we ended up putting a ceiling fan in the bathroom that runs 24 hours a day on low. When I take a shower, I turn up to high for 20 minutes. Problem solved.
Right. Basically, what you're doing is you're depressurizing your house, and you're also keeping the humidity low. If you had the money to put in HRV system, then what you'd be doing in the middle of the winter is, as that warm air leaves the bathroom, you'd be scavenging that heat and letting a little bit of fresh air come in. So that would be even better. But what you have is good. You're depressurizing, you're controlling the humidity through diffusion, and your house is a lot healthier for it.
What is an HRV system?
Heat recovery ventilation system is basically, think of like a radiator, where you're taking that, so you're blowing that air out of the bathroom, right? And it's 70 degrees probably at the ceiling.
Yep.
So it goes over this radiator, and this radiator scavenges a bunch of the heat. And then it has another tube where the air is coming in, going over that same radiator. So in the middle of winter, when it's 10 degrees outside, you're taking that 70 degrees, moving it through the radiator, so that air that's coming in is probably in the mid-50s.
Nice. Thank you. And my second comment is, I want to thank your guest, Larry, for being very clear. Everything you said today, I completely understand. Very nice.
Wonderful. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate your call.
Thanks, Eric.
Those heat recovery systems really are great.
They really are. But, you know, on a lot of homes, Eric has the cheap solution.
Yeah.
If his house doesn't leak a lot, he's putting in some air changes. And Larry, right now, when we're building houses in Wisconsin, we're really aiming for 0.2 to 0.5 air changes per hour. That's not a lot of air changes. I think perhaps you or somebody said, is there such a thing as a house that's too tight?
No.
There's no such thing as a house that's too tight as long as we ventilate it.
Yeah.
And Eric is ventilating his in a very basic way, and it's going to take a long time to pay for a $3,000 HRV, but in some houses, it does make sense.
Paul in Madison, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I have a question. We're in the process of remodeling our bathroom right now, and it's an old house. We re-leveled the floors a couple days ago, and I came in, and the builder had put down a 3/4-inch OSB board for the subfloor. And I just heard your comments about you can grow any kind of fungi on OSB. Would we be smart at this point to pull that up and put down a plywood floor?
Maybe.
It depends. Okay.
What sort of flooring are you putting in over the top of the OSB, Paul?
I'm guessing it's going to be a tile.
Okay. The nice thing about that is then you can use like a Dutra product, which has its own moisture control barrier. It's sort of an orange product that can be put over the floors. So that is going to help you a lot. As long as we don't get that floor wet, we're not going to get condensation on that floor, right? Because it's warm both sides.
Right, yeah.
So I don't see a problem. Where we really see the problems with oriented strand board is where we've got a temperature differential. And you don't on your bathroom floor, so yes, if the wax ring on the stool leaks in 5 years, the OSB is going to react a lot worse than the plywood would or solid wood. But let's not worry about that. Let's not tear up perfectly good stuff. Let's just make sure your tile guy, say to the tile guy, we want a Dutra or a similar product put down here so this floor is 100% dry.
Got it. Very good. Thank you much for the help.
You bet, Paul. Thank you for calling. And let's see. We have Jeff in Sun Prairie next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, we recently, within the last 2 weeks, enclosed a screened-in porch with the Easy Glide vinyl window products.
Okay.
If John's familiar with that. And the minute we did it, we have tremendous condensation on the inside of the windows. The manufacturer is not familiar that this should happen, and the person that installed it has never had the issue either in 9 to 9 or 12 installations. So what we just did 2 days ago, we put 5 vents along the bottom outside underneath the porch to help ventilate it. So my issue, I'm wondering if we're doing the right thing or if John is at all familiar with these relatively new products, the vinyl Easy Glide windows.
I'm familiar with a large variety of vinyl windows, Jeff. Let me ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
So this was a screen porch. You've now enclosed this. It's sort of like a three-season room now?
Yes, and it's not vinyl windows. It's basically just a sheet of vinyl. So it's not a quote window product. It's
right.
Just basically,
yeah.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's
about.
Just right. It basically
zero,
it's an
zero.
R1.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Yeah, basically okay. Something that's designed for porches and not really for a
correct.
Heated area. Okay.
Yes, correct.
So we have something that is going to be really close to the outside temperature most of the time.
Most of the time.
Right.
Yes.
And you vented underneath it because you're a little bit worried about moisture coming up from the warm soil, coming up through the floor, and then
correct.
You've got it trapped in there and it's condensing out. That was probably a real good idea.
Okay.
Here's number two.
Okay.
You probably have air leaks coming into that porch area from the house.
Okay.
So if this is like off the kitchen or off the dining room or something where the air is the moistest in the house, if it's leaking mm-hmm. out, the air leaks that are coming into that room, the air is going to drop in temperature. The relative humidity as it drops in temperature is going to go up. And then when mm-hmm. it hits those windows, it's going to condense out.
Okay.
So I think here we go again with focus on energy, Larry. But
yeah.
How old is your house, Jeff?
It was built in 68.
68,
the
okay.
The porch was added on about probably 10 to 12 years ago.
Sure, but 68, you know, we built a lot different back in 68.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest if part of an energy analysis, there's usually two parts to it. One is depressurizing the house to about 50 pascals to see where the air leaks are. So basically
okay.
you make the house suck and you mm-hmm. see and then you can measure how much air is leaking in.
Okay.
Well, the leaking in is also leaking out, isn't it?
Sure.
So an energy analyst may say, Paul, this whole wall against this former screen porch, now mm-hmm. plexiglass porch, is leaking air like mad. Let's tighten mm-hmm. it up. You tighten that up,
okay.
that stops the moisture from going from the house, migrating into three-season room, and then that solves your issue. Plus,
okay.
you may get some other really valuable advice about ways you can upgrade this house. So
okay.
take a look for, I prefer the independent inspectors rather than ones that are actually working
okay.
for an insulation company, but
okay.
there are several very, very good ones in the Madison area who do tremendous work. And as Larry said earlier, they will also sit down with you and say, look, here's the paybacks, and let's take a look at Focus on Energy and see if some rebates are available
okay.
as well. So I think what we have is we've got an air movement problem. Moisture is getting out there. Moisture is condensing from inside the house. To cure it, we need to stop the air movement.
Okay, great. And where would I find a listing or anything of the people that do that?
Focus on Energy. Just type it
yeah.
into your computer. It's going to
okay.
pop up, and then you
all
should
right.
be able to click on for your area, find energy inspectors in
great.
This area.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help, and I appreciate the program.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Jeff. Lee in Deerfield, your turn now. Hi, Lee.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. What I've got is I've got an older home. I totally redone it. I have in-floor heat, hot water in-floor heat, and I'm just curious if I should have a exchanger, air exchanger in the house for air-wise, because I do get some condensation on the windows, not much, but some.
Well, I think the first thing to do, Lee, is let's get a humidistat and see what the humidity is in the house. Maybe you don't need anything. So,
well, we've got a barometer/humidity gauge on the wall. It's around 40%.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. You know, as I said earlier, I expect to see condensation on windows. You know, unless we've got the humidity so low that we really don't want to live in the place, that is simply something we're going to have. So you may not have a problem at all.
Okay, I'm just curious. And there are vinyl windows, so they're not a wood grain window. They're all vinyl.
Right. And
yep.
that they're a little bit more, a little bit easier to maintain under condensing conditions, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So I was just curious because I'm wondering this. I mean, now you say you have an insulation on the outside. I'll just tell you what I did. I foamed the inside of my house, exterior walls, and then I got the original tongue and groove boards from the outside of the house, and I
mm-hmm.
had 3/4-inch foil-faced insulation on the outside. And the seams taped.
That sounds like a very nice system. You're very airtight. If you use the two-part spray foam, you've got good air control, you've got good vapor control, you've got good thermal control. So it sounds like you've done a real smart job there.
Okay, but you don't think I need an air exchanger?
Unless you are really seeing a problem.
No, not really. I'm just curious because we do get some condensation. We mm-hmm. do have a garden window in the kitchen. That always has a problem, but I think that's because it sticks out farther outside.
Right.
Moist, you know,
right. That gets water vapor off of the sink. Let me just digress for just 1 second here, Lee, on HRVs. That there are multiple reasons for using HRVs, and they all have to do with air quality. So it's not just humidity. But if we have a house, like a brand-new house where we're still off-gassing chemicals, we've got formaldehyde. It seems we can't build anything in the 21st century without the use of formaldehyde. If we have a lot of people in the house, if we've got CO issues, all of those are also helped by an HRV. So an HRV isn't just for humidity, I want to make clear.
Okay. There we go. You know, thanks again for calling. We appreciate it. You know, I get no moisture on my windows. I wonder if I've got to check the humidity level of my It seems I'm comfortable.
You may have very, very good windows, Larry, because...
Yeah, I do.
we do have windows. I mean, there are windows that are widely used in the Scandinavian countries and Alaska that are literally twice as good as what we have in Wisconsin if you measure the amount of heat loss. And we've occasionally installed those in Wisconsin. I shouldn't say we. I have occasionally specified those in Wisconsin as Norwegian-made windows and things for houses on the lake with terrible wind loads where they're having trouble. So you may simply have good quality windows in your house.
Well, they were all brand new about 4 years ago, and they were the most expensive windows that you could buy. So maybe that's it.
Well, there's about a 300 to 400% difference between inexpensive windows and really good windows, and that's a lot.
We have more callers online. John Freiberger, our guest today of John Freiberger and Associates, Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older homes. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement, controlling condensation, and all kinds of home questions here with John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates. Great to have you with us, Larry Mueller here. Join in. There's an open line at 800-642-1234. We turn next to Laura in Milwaukee. Laura, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I have a problem I'm hoping you can help me solve in our bedroom. We live in a 1950s Cape Cod, and we renovated the upstairs space about 5 years ago, put in a master bedroom, master bathroom, and we didn't want to try to get the downstairs heat up through the little feeble floor vent that was there. So we put in a PTAC unit to heat and cool the upstairs part of our house. And the PTAC unit has a metal wall sleeve that goes through from the inside to the outside. And I think that metal wall sleeve is giving a surface for condensation to happen inside our room. The paint on the drywall right around the edge of that PTAC unit is bubbled up, and the drywall feels very spongy. We're worried about mold, and we don't really know what to do to fix that.
Well, I think you've analyzed that correctly. What we've got is we've got metal that is transferring heat out, and therefore is cold, and we're probably getting condensation on that metal. And then, of course, the backside of that drywall is basically chip poplar. It's the same stuff we make paper towels out of. So it is absorbing water and probably growing some mold in the back there. Unfortunately, that's a type of unit that we generally ask people to avoid, frankly, because of the housings around them leak so much air and cause so much heat loss through the transference, through the metal. I mean, the U value on metal is pretty low.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you can do about that. It's too bad that you didn't think of a way to get the heat up from downstairs. There are a lot of clever ways of doing that. I know Cape Cods can be difficult, especially if they're built in the 50s. But do you have a chimney in the house?
We do have a chimney, yeah.
Do you have a fireplace?
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so do you have a side-vented water heater and side-vented furnace now, or do you still have old atmospherically coupled?
Still going up the chimney.
Still going up the chimney. Okay, so let's think about some long-term planning. So we've got sort of a nasty, not terribly efficient system in there right now, and we're going to leave it there for a couple of years. But what we're going to do is when you get a new furnace, you're going to put in a side-vented furnace, new water heater, side-vented water heater. At that point, that chimney becomes redundant. that chimney can be taken out, which means you no longer have to maintain the roof, you no longer have the air leak around it, and you've got this nice 2-foot by 2-foot hole in your house. Now, that allows you not only to bring heat ducts upstairs, but also high returns on the first floor and the second floor, which you probably don't have, so the AC is going to work much better. So sort of plan that for the long term. Make the chimney redundant, get rid of it, utilize that hole, high return, low return, and then there's that laundry chute you always really wanted. You can have that as well.
Excellent.
And then we'll get rid of that inefficient PTAC unit from the wall, and we'll just patch that up.
In the meantime, should we be looking at like a green board or something that is more moisture resistant, at least to replace that drywall with?
Green board has the properties are almost as bad as regular drywall. There's very little difference. What you'd have to do is probably cut it out and use something that has a mineral basis. So there are such things as mineral boards. There are fiberglass and calcium sulfate boards and other things that basically mold can grow on the dirt on anything, but mold won't actually grow on something like that because it doesn't have paper. So you could have somebody come in, cut around it, double check the insulation, spray foam as best you can, and then put a product or maybe just frame around it with wood for now if we're going to be getting rid of the thing in a few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Or don't frame around with wood. Frame around with AZEK, which is PVC. And that PVC, it is never going to grow mold, and it's never going to decay because that's what on a newer house, what the sewer pipes are made of. So I think that's probably a smart idea. Let's do a little bit of a limited amount of money spent on retrofitting that, and then let's plan on, and remember the focus on energy rebates when you switch out those old furnaces and water heaters, is you should be able to get a little bit of money for that as well.
All wonderful. Right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. And let's see, Gail in Door County, your turn. Hi, Gail.
Well, hi, guys. You guys were talking about earlier the condensation on the windows.
Yeah.
And when we built our house about 10 years ago, and we had an air exchanger, a separate unit that the builders put on, so that we were using that to get that humidity from the new construction out of the house, and I still use it periodically, like especially in the winter time, to get excess condensation out. But I use it less and less now as the years go on. But I noticed that on the south side of the wall, the only time I get any condensation is if I close the draperies all the way and I make a pocket when it gets really, really cold. Yeah. So I don't close the drapes, and then I don't get that pocket. And I keep the fan on my regular furnace. I keep the fan on all the time so that I always have air circulating all the time. So it kind of takes up for that air exchanger that the builders put in. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that might help some of the people that are talking about this condensation, because I'm really not getting any, and it doesn't feel a little dry in the house.
No, you're quite right. As somebody asked earlier, can a house be too tight? And the answer is no, as long as we have an HRV or an ERV, which is we don't really need in Wisconsin, because that one will also capture water vapor. But yeah, your HRV is wonderful that your builder put that in for you. That is giving you not only reducing your humidity, but it's keeping your air nice and clean as well. So if you've got byproducts from cooking, CO, CO2, all of those things are, if you buy a new couch and the formaldehyde comes out of the cushion, that HRV is helping cleanse the air of all of those things. And yes, when you close the drapes, you're lowering the temperature. So the relative humidity is going up of the air trapped behind the drapes. So yes, you will get condensation when you close the drapes.
Now, should she be running that all the time? She said Gail says she turns it on and turns it off.
No, I don't think you need to run them all the time. And the newer ones, the smart ones that we have now, you can actually, they have oxygen sensors, they have humidity sensors. Now, this one, it sounds like Gail's is 10 years old, but many of them can be upgraded with new controls. Or you have a humidistat on the wall, if that's your primary, and you see it's suddenly at 46%, you turn on the HRV till it drops back to 38 or 40. And it sounds like Gail is running her house in a really intelligent way, and she worked with a good builder and had a good house.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Gail.
Sure.
Yeah, appreciate your call very much. Barry in Appleton has a different situation, perhaps. Let's go there. Hi, Barry.
Hi. How you doing, Larry? Thanks
Good.
For taking my call.
Sure thing.
I've got kind of a unique situation. It's an old ice company building, two-story, fairly large, built in 1910, where the workers were stayed when they were working on the ice on the lake. But anyway, we remodeled it, and since then, we've had condensation in the second floor ceiling, actually, that drips into, or doesn't drip, but it stains the ceiling and the corners of parts of the second floor ceiling. And the construction on it is kind of unusual. For some reason back then, they built it so there's no crawl space in the attic. It's a flat, basically a flat roof, a slight pitch on it. But it's got no crawl space other than all it's got is what's in between the rafters. So the ceiling of the second floor is attached to the rafter bottom, if it makes sense. So I'm wondering, and we don't heat it in the winter. It's kind of a summer place that we use. It's near a lake, of course, because it's a lake. Our ice company, but it, and I'm wondering if there's some system, as I'm listening to you, it sounds like the best solution would be to somehow get the humidity way down in winter before it gets too cold, or before winter, and then keep it down in the spring to avoid the condensation issue, which doesn't occur during the summer months at all when we're there. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of is there a fan that's sensitive to humidity outside that would just pull in low humidity air whenever it's out there to bring it down or to cool the inside of the building quickly?
Now the first floor is heated all year round. Is that right?
No, neither floor is heated.
Okay, so
after Thanksgiving, I should say, we keep it heated until Thanksgiving, where we have a big gathering of family and stuff.
Yeah, and what is the material on the ceiling on the second floor? Is it lath and plaster, or is it just a wood?
It was lath and plaster, but we remodeled it, and there had been some damage. So what we did was put in some drywall or whatever.
Oh, that's too bad.
And then there's still some lath and plaster there, too, in different rooms. There are about 11 rooms upstairs, of course. These were bedrooms for 40 men.
Right. Yeah. The lath and plaster is going to perform a lot better under low temperature and high relative humidity than the drywall. The drywall will actually turn moldy when the relative humidity reaches 80%. So,
okay. I'm not sure it's reaching that level. I think what's happening is the roof is just cooling down.
The building may leak so much, Barry, that it pretty much stays at whatever the outside humidity is. So I think the thing to do is to just keep an eye on that drywall. And if you start seeing the typical blue and white blossoms of penicillums and aspergillus on the drywall, then you know you've got a problem. Otherwise, if it is, and this building may be so leaky that it does indeed drop the humidity to the point where you aren't getting condensation or there's so little water vapor that there's not much to condense. I mean, really long-term, what you could think about is when that flat roof needs to be replaced at some point in the future, then put insulation over the top of the roof deck. So multiple layers of like an isocyanurate type of insulation, and then put the new flat roof over that. That then is going to sort of both air seal and insulate that upper roof deck so that it is going to stay warmer in there. And you know, maybe long term, you'll find that if you do enough work on it and tighten it up enough that you can actually keep some sort of heat in it.
Okay. Someone else suggested one time a spring, tight foam into it.
That also works quite well. But as far as cost, generally, and as far as getting rid of thermal bridging, because if we can spray foam into the interstitial spaces, but we still have the transfer out through the solid wood. So actually the top of the deck foam usually is less expensive, and you get more bang for your buck because you don't have the reduction in thermal efficiency by the thermal bridging.
Okay, so you just take off the old roof and basically
put foam on top of it, put a new roof down.
Okay.
And you can either, most roofers know how to use the isocyanurate panels. There also are energy panels available. Cornell company here, Cornell Panels here in Wisconsin, go to their website. Take a look at their panels. They have vented and unvented ones that are very easy to work with. It's all pre-assembled with new roof sheathing glued right to the foam.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Take a look at rubber roof kind of?
Yep. You could put a rubber roof right over the top of that. Or nowadays, we're not using rubber so much. We're using thermoplastics and vinyl. But you've got lots of different types of roof that can be put right over the top of that. And it's really quite easy to install. Basically, it comes up. You got long nails, long screws. You screw it down. You put the roof over the top of it.
No kidding. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Barry. Good luck with it. It sounds like a pretty cool building, to be perfectly honest.
It really does. I'm just sort of wondering if some of these things, maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea for Barry to take a couple photos of it. And if the outside still looks fairly original and there's a little bit of history, maybe contact the State Historic Society. Possible that there might be some sort of tax credits available for the restoration or maintenance of that nice old building.
Ah, good idea. We had a listener email because a friend is looking to build a standing seam metal roof in Oshkosh, but there's a city ordinance against it. We don't have a lot of time here, but...
I don't know why there would be a city ordinance. There's absolutely nothing wrong with standing seam metal roofs. We've seen metal roofs out there that were put on in the 1880s and 1890s that are still there. Check with your alderman. The alderman is usually the person to go with when something from the city seems to be peculiar. So I would call your first stop down at the city, talk to planning and zoning, building inspection, find out if it's really true. Secondly, if it's really true, talk to your alderman.
There we go. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, our guest, will be back with us right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures, and talks with us about all kinds of home improvement things. And we've zeroed in today a bit on condensation. We'll go back to the phones. Jim in Lang Lake County, it's your turn next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. A little different twist on condensation. I have a older cabin that I've been basically heating the basement, and the put in a modern, about 96-97% efficient gas furnace. And the maintenance guy was saying he thought there ought to be a minimum temperature for the cold air return of 64 degrees. Otherwise, the furnace wouldn't operate properly. My plan had been to turn the basement temperature down to like 55 when we weren't there, and then, you know, turn it up when we were there. But the goal primarily is heating the basement, and then a couple runs of lead air to the upstairs.
Was he right about that, John?
Well, I think he probably is. Now, it's going to every furnace manufacturer has different specifications on it. But I'm constant referring people to their furnace technicians and specialists because of the difference in the brands. So the other thing that we've talked about is when we get below 60, 62 degrees, the relative humidity is going up so much in these buildings, even though they're only being used seasonally, that we can end up with mold problems. So I would suspect that the technician is correct, and I think there are other reasons to argue that a higher temperature is probably better for the building than the lower temperature.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Jim. Gary and Slinger, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hey, Larry, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, this is probably a little bit off a track of what you've been centered in on here, but we have a new construction home that we just moved into, and I noticed on the cold air return there is a direct line to an outside vent, so it seems like we're pulling in cold air whether we're heating it or cooling it. What's the reasoning for that?
Well, the reasoning is that they want your house to have very few air changes per hour, in fact, less than an air change every 2 hours or every 5 hours. So therefore, we're going to end up with indoor air quality issues. So what the state of Wisconsin has said is we have to have fresh makeup air. The problem with that fresh makeup air is that we're pressurizing your house because your furnace fan is pulling in from the outside. So we're increasing the air pressure in the house compared to the outside. We're blowing up a balloon, and we're using the furnace to blow up the balloon. So on areas where our vapor barrier is not good, we are now pushing warm, moist air into the walls where we can get condensation and mold. So basically, it's something that is in the code because not everybody can afford an HRV. I wish the code simply said everybody need an HRV. So you are correct, Gary. It's not a good idea. Basically, it's like having a hole in your house. In some ways, we'd be better to have a hole in your house because the hole in the house wouldn't necessarily be pressurizing it. So it does improve the air quality, but it can cause condensation issues. Maybe think about replacing it with an HRV.
Yeah, that was my second question. And, you know, if you have the HRV, then can you get around that code?
Yes, then you're rid of that. In fact, you can use that as one of the intakes for the intake or the exhaust for the HRV because you're going to need two penetrations in the wall for the HRV. But take a look at the HRV. You're probably looking at better air quality, less condensation, and lower utility bills.
Yeah, the previous house that we had one on it, and it was also controlled by a humidistat.
Right.
Yeah.
Real good idea, Gary.
Perfect.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. Charles sent us a note and wonders, what the heck is OSB anyway? And could you be a little more specific, as he's having trouble understanding some home improvement jargon?
Charles, I apologize. Thanks for calling me on that. I, whenever I write a report, I always explain what OSB is before I talk about it. And I say, hereafter, OSB. So OSB is oriented strand board. So basically what we do is we take a log, usually of popple, it's always softwood, and we chip it up into little flat chips. And then we orient the strands in different directions so they're not all going the same direction. And then we put an adhesive and we glue it all together. So basically what we have is we've got chip softwood held together by glue. And as I said earlier, this is the same stuff we make paper towels out of. So it absorbs water like mad. Now, it usually comes from LP or the other manufacturers with a urethane spray on it, which is to keep it dry until it is put up on the wall. But LP and everybody else will tell you that this material has to be protected from moisture. So it is an inexpensive building material. It's cheaper than plywood. It's much, much cheaper than boards. The problem is that because of the type of wood that is in it, it will condense out just the way drywall will at 80% relative humidity, and it will grow mold. So if we're going to use it, we have to be really careful with it. Thanks for asking that, Charles.
Yeah. By the way, you can join in too. Open lines get you on pretty quickly at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go back and take a look at some other messages we've received. Jeff from Wausau wants to know if there are any long-term problems caused by taking a long shower without using the exhaust fan. Will there be any damage to the roof? Now, why would he want to do that?
I don't know. Our exhaust fans are very important for getting some of this humidity out of the house. And we have to make sure that our exhaust fans are the right size, not little tiny noisy ones that we don't want to use, which is maybe why he's not using it. I mean, we have some beautiful exhaust fans nowadays, Larry.
They don't make any noise at all.
No, we've had fans that are so quiet that we put a lighted switch in the bathroom so you know when they're on. And some of them will move 200 or 250 cubic feet per minute for the people that take long showers or maybe have a hot tub or a whirlpool indoors. And that exhaust fan needs to go through an insulated duct out through the roof or out through the wall to the exterior. But they're very important to use because we need to keep that water vapor down in our Wisconsin homes, especially in the winter.
Dawn emailed to say she's getting the heck out of town, and for a bit of time, which I don't know how long, but what's the lowest temperature the furnace should be set at to prevent mold?
Well, that's also a good question. Part of it depends upon what the humidity is in your house. In many cases, if we can get the humidity down below 40%, then we can have the heat down at around 60. And and we're fairly safe. I like to have about 10 degrees of margin because different parts of the house are colder than other parts of the house. And so we might get condensation in that coat closet or the closet in the bedroom with the outside wall where the bedroom is just fine. The bedroom's at 60 and the closet is maybe 5 or 6 degrees colder. So I would say probably 60, but we did have a caller earlier say that his tech said 64 degrees. So I would probably take a look inside your furnace at the nameplate. It's going to give you the make and the model. Call their tech support or email them and say, what's the lowest setting for this furnace if it's a condensing furnace?
There we go. Bob in Claybanks is painting a painting contractor, and he says he's covered a lot of windowsills with a natural finish with paint because the paint holds up better against condensation.
Okay, I'm not sure what Bob means by a natural finish. Perhaps he's saying like a tongue oil or something.
Yeah.
And certainly there are things other than paints and varnishes that we can use on windows, and certainly a tongue oil is one of them. Sutherland Wells, which is an old New England company with genius chemists, makes some wonderful old-fashioned tongue oils that work really well. Many times we use things like linseed oil in the old days, and we basically filled the pores with that. And then we could add a little bit more. It's almost like we're, you know, dusting with tongue oil. So yes, there are things other than just the paint and varnish, and you can do a little bit of research.
Todd on Facebook wonders if you would recommend foregoing OSB or a plywood sheathing and sheath with a foam board, then side it. He's doing construction on a 2x6 wall.
Here's the problem, is the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code has many, many pages on what's called wall bracing. We live in some pretty windy areas in Wisconsin, and we get 60 and 80 mile hour winds with frequency. And our houses have to take a 20 pound per square foot exterior load, which is about an 80 mile an hour wind. So your builder is probably going to say, sorry, I have to use plywood or OSB. Now, certainly, if you have a choice between plywood and OSB, I would use plywood every time as long as you can afford it. There are ways where I've seen houses where the essential areas against wind racking, they've used a half-inch plywood and half-inch foam and one-inch foam other areas. You may actually have to talk to an architect to get that properly designed out for you so that you meet the wind load criteria, but yet have a product that is maintainable through a long period of time. And the other thing, Larry, is I don't like OSB, but we have a lot of it. And we have learned how to design so the OSB works. And one of these things, as we talked about earlier, is have at least 40% and preferably more than 50% of your insulation on the outside wall so that OSB is so warm that it's never going to condense. So maybe talk to a thermal designer and say, what should I do here? I want to put OSB on so I've got a nice strong house. If I don't want it to ever get wet, how do I do that?
Yeah. And Mary Ann in Hurdle called to ask for a recommendation for a really quality brand of windows to replace her picture window in a house on a lake with lots of condensation.
Well, I don't want to get into brands. What I'm going to tell you is what to look for, Mary Ann. Now, there's a thing called the National Fenestration Council, and they rate windows. And you can't rely upon necessarily what the window manufacturer says, because many times what the window manufacturer does is they tell you, here's the U value or the thermal transmittance, but that's taken at the center of the window.
No.
But then when you get to the outside of the window where the spacers are and the glass is and the frame is, the U value is not nearly as good. So I would say that what you want to do is you want to talk to several different manufacturers. And I would suggest that you try to get something that has an average U value. If you can get it below 0.3, that's good. If you get it below 0.25, that's fabulous.
Okay, there we go. Suzanne in Whitefish Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I'm calling not about windows and that, but you've been talking a lot about mold, and I have a bathroom remodel. We did a great job. We have a Mickelson colonial home. I don't know if that pretty much sets things in place, but where we had a closet, we now have a shower, and then we decided to put an undermount tub and a stone quartzite, exactly. And what happened is the stone person who, the company that cuts the stone and installs the stone, they actually installed the stone not level. So there is a gap. There is a gap between, it runs, let's say the tub runs north and south. So at one end, there's about a 3-inch gap. And
a gap between stones?
No, between the wood frame. You know, when you do an undermount tub, you have to have a wood frame. We have the wood frame. And we set this up properly. It was by the plumber, you know, they installed the tub level. Everything was level. And the tile person did the work level. But the people who installed this tub surface actually installed it not level. Therefore, what I'm calling about is a concern about mold trapping in there, in the gap. And I'm concerned about how to move forward with this project. I would like some sort of guidance on how to move forward. So it has a tub surface of quartzite stone, beautiful mm-hmm. stone. And it was supposed to have the same stone as a tub face.
Right.
And the problem is, I'm just concerned about moving forward. The stone installer company, they don't want to work on this project anymore. They are saying, the point that I want you to answer is, do I have a concern with this gap of collecting mold? Because it is the joint, it is the end of the tub that connects with the shower. I'm just concerned about mold developing in that space, because you've been talking a lot about mold and spacing. I'm thinking that my understanding is they should have installed it exactly on the frame, of the wood frame, but they didn't. And so in that space, and the gap is about 3/8 of an inch. And I think that's a great place for, and as I'm listening to you, I think it's a great place for mold to collect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is. But these gaps can be sealed. Now, first, you have a right to have this done correctly under Wisconsin mm-hmm. law. And you may want to go online and look at Wisconsin Right to Cure, which lays out exactly what you say to the stone people, and then they have a certain time to respond to you. It's a way of getting things done right without having to hire an attorney or going to court. So take a look at that first. Let's see if we can get it done right. If you can't get it done right for whatever reason, there are very, very high quality sealants that can be used. Now, you need to have a bond breaker, a foam rod in back of it, and then a caulk sealant. And this is not something that your local painter does. This is something that is done by a professional caulker. But fortunately, you're in an area that has good quality professionals. So let's try to get this cured first using Wisconsin Right to Cure. If that's impossible, then see if we can get this sealed with a proper color match caulk by a sealing professional, so that we absolutely have to keep all moisture from getting through that seam and back to that wood. Does that make sense to you?
I'm hoping it is the solution. I'm hoping that, so in the place where there is an air space, then there would be some, who would be a company to, I know you can't mention names, but.
Well, I can, but the problem is in Whitefish Bay in Milwaukee, I don't know a good caulker, but I would Google professional caulkers in that area, and I think you'll find one. It actually is fairly easy to do, but 90% of the people don't know how to do it because they've never read anything. Mm-hmm. So you can also go to websites like for NP1 or Sewn Elastic. Somebody bought Sewn Elastic now, and take a look at how to caulk, and you can actually download YouTube videos as well as installation instructions from caulk manufacturers that show you how caulking should be done. But a joint of 3/8 of an inch is something that can be caulked with a good quality caulk, but you do need to have a bond break in the back, and some of that doesn't make any sense until you actually look at the videos or look at the drawings in the installation mm-hmm. instructions. Mm-hmm. So number one, let's try to get it done right. Number two, do some research And number three, find a good professional, and then don't trust them. Hand them what you have and watch them while they do it.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling, and good luck, Suzanne. Appreciate it. Brett in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Brett.
Hi. Love the show, Larry.
Thank you.
I just was calling because I have asbestos slate siding on the outside of my house, and it's over I'm pretty sure it's over old wood siding. And my house was built in 1930, so it's got to be lead paint all over the place.
Oh, sure.
But I'm just calling to see if there's what I could possibly do with that siding. The thing that is kind of the problem is that I had Western Dairyland come out, and they did a test on the house, and it turns out the house is actually really tight,
mm-hmm.
even though it has windows
wow.
that are original. So I'm just wondering, is there something I should do with that siding? I'm pretty sure you can't go over top of it, but I think that you could possibly take it off or something.
Yes, you can indeed take it off. What you'll need to do is you'll need to check with what's the latest EPA requirements are on it. It's mm-hmm. not, and I the last time I looked, it was not considered to be friable. So
okay.
you were able to landfill it without going to one of the specific friable asbestos landfills. So do a little bit of research first.
Sure.
It's great that this house is so tight. It's possible
yeah.
that what they did is they put on multiple layers of old-fashioned felt on the outside, which actually was a pretty good air barrier because it came in,
mm-hmm.
came in sheets, and if they overlapped it by 6 inches, some of the old guys even tarred it.
Yeah.
So you may have a really well-built house, but if you're
yeah.
thinking of taking off the asbestos and then replacing the old siding, which I'm sure is full of lead paint, so you have to have a lead-certified crew, then take a look mm-hmm. at rain screen siding if you want to go back to a wood siding that you want to last forever and only have to maybe paint every 20 years or so. Just Google
sure.
rain screen. You'll find things at the Forest Products Lab and other places. It would be a way of adding maybe a little bit of additional foam on the exterior of your wall, put on a mm-hmm. weather-resistant wind barrier, and then be able to put on a pre-finished siding that is going to have a really long life and be not maintenance-free, but something that you only have to worry about every 10 to 20 years.
Sure, great. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And Jenny in Wauwatosa, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling because my husband and I bought a home a little over a year ago. We had a gutter draining improperly, and it caused kind of like a hole slash like ditch to form about a couple feet wide. We fixed the gutter situation and the draining, but now we need to fix the grading because we can tell it's causing water damage, and we can see the moisture coming through in our basement. The problem is we have two air conditioners because it's a duplex right in that spot, and we're not sure how to handle it or how to prevent this from happening in the future.
Okay, one possibility would be to actually side mount the air conditioners from your foundation. They have brackets that can be attached to the house, so you can put the air conditioners up off the ground, and then you can actually grade underneath the air conditioners.
Oh, why not?
Any AC guys can be able to do that for you.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for that call. I appreciate it very much. And you know what? We are out of time.
It goes so quickly.
John, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us. And you'll be back in a couple of months. We'll do it all over again.
I will be.
John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, our guest today. And he, as I said, he'll be back in 2 months, probably from just about today. And we will do this all over again with him. Tomorrow, we have some suggestions for you for great gardening gifts for the person or the people in your life with green thumbs. That will be tomorrow at 11 o'clock. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.